everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the age of AIDS when we come back. While Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history, surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right, but it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, our federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. A study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems. These systems contain 10,799 categories of information about New York residents, and every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how information is gathered and what information is stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free. You can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org and just click onto the email machine and send us an email request. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. The age of AIDS. We've been in this AIDS epidemic now for about 25 years. The people at Frontline, WGBH, put out a two-part special on AIDS, a chronology from 1959 to 2006 to tell us the history of it and how many people have AIDS today. Well, in 1981, June 5th, 1981, the CDC came out with some statistics concerning this thing of AIDS. It's when they first took cognizance of a problem that they later named AIDS. HIV was another term that they hung on it, and they've expanded on their knowledge, and they've created a history of it, and that's what we're reviewing here, is the history of AIDS. Now, AIDS is pandemic. That means that it's worldwide, and it's an infectious disease. Very infectious. It's kind of like bubonic plague. It isn't, you know, delivered to you by somebody sneezing across the room, but it's very infectious through body fluids. It's a sexually transmitted disease. 70 million people so far have AIDS. 30 million out of the 70 million have already died. The 40 million who have it today are going to die within the next 6 to 8 years. With very rare exception, there are probably less than 100 people worldwide who have had AIDS for any period of time. Say any period of time, 10, 15, 20 years. There are a few. There may be more than 100, but I kind of doubt that. AIDS is a death sentence. And the AIDS cocktail, all of these drugs, there's 24 drugs now that they now have in the AIDS cocktail. These drugs can postpone death from 1 to 2 years, which is the normal course of the disease. Once you develop AIDS, you'll die within about 1 to 2 years. They can now extend your life from 6 to 8 years, and in some cases a little longer. Now, if you're an American and you have AIDS, you're going to die from AIDS. You need a solution to the problem, and the AIDS cocktail isn't the solution. You need to be cured, not treated. Now, medical science only treats disease because if they cured the disease, it would shut off the money tree. There's no more money to be made. Furthermore, if we cured the disease, then there's no more research money. AIDS is a cash cow like cancer. Disease is a cash cow because you have to have a treatment, a solution. You want it. You will pay whatever is demanded of you. It doesn't make any difference if the pharmaceutical industry says they want $600 or $6,000 or $600,000, you'll pay it. And they know that. I mean, nobody wants to die. So last time I pointed out to you that AIDS cocktail, the drugs, are cheap, dirt cheap. And they sell them for $275 to poor people in Africa and $16,000 to rich people in America. And they don't cost any more to produce in Africa, and they don't cost any more to produce in America. It's a ripoff. Yeah, in my view, you ought not to participate in it, but then I'm not here to tell you people what to participate in. I'm just here to deliver information. You can make your own decisions. You know, you're an adult. Figure out what you want to do. If you want to pay $16,000 a year to the medical profession to keep you alive for 6 more years, get after it. I think that a better solution is don't get it to start with, and you ought to start by educating yourself. And I can't think of a better place to educate yourself than WGBH Boston. If you'll go to the webpage, www.pbs.org, that'll put you on the PBS website. Then go to wgbh.com/pages/frontline, and you can get this 48-page report. This is the entire text of the 4 hours that they put on television. The whole story takes you through the entire history of AIDS, tells you what the statistics and the numbers are, and more importantly, it tells you what the high-risk groups are. And I mentioned to you, the purpose for AIDS is behavior modification. Your creator wants to correct your behavior. He wants to change your behavior. And of course, I pointed this out to you last time, that there's groups of people that do not want their behavior changed. And they don't have to change their behavior, but they can't live if they don't. And that's the bottom line. Now, in 1986, ultimately, AZT, the miracle drug, which is approved by the Food and Drug Administration in March of 1987, turns out to be not the miracle drug that researchers had hoped for. For some individuals, it has debilitating side effects that lead them to stop taking it. Furthermore, after a certain point, the virus mutates and develops resistance to the drug. Well, not only does the virus develop resistance to it, side effects means that you develop resistance to it. And it's a poison. And after all, you got this virus and we want to kill it. You're a living organism, and inside of your living organism, there's a living organism that you want to kill. So you put poison into your living organism to kill the living organism that's in your body. Now, God has designed certain herbs to do that. For instance, you can have intestinal parasites, and those are living organisms inside of your body, and you want to get rid of them. You can do that. And there are herbs designed by God. And in the Bible, there's 32 herbs that are mentioned. There's actually about 82 or 3 or 4 herbs. 32 of them are mentioned in the Bible as having medicinal benefits. Pharmaceutical companies know that. They can't patent walnut hulls, but they can patent worm medications. And so they come up with chemical substitutes, which are toxic. Now, when you take herbs, they're a food. They're not toxic. But when you synthesize these drugs, you know, cocoa leaves are just green herbs. Chewing cocoa leaves is a part and parcel with life. Synthesizing cocaine out of cocoa leaves is witchcraft. And so we'd like to get a bigger, better bang out of the cocoa leaves, and so we want to synthesize it down. Hoffman LaRoche and Merck and Pfizer and all these drug companies, they've got chemical substitutes for the natural herbs that God has designed for your health and well-being. So if you want to cure your AIDS, then you go to the Bible and you stop poisoning yourself and you start taking those herbs that will strengthen your immune system so that your immune system can kill the invading pathogens. And that's the design mechanism that God put into the program. People don't want to do that. You know, people don't want to go into a restaurant and sit down and eat. They want to drive up to the drive-up window and order and then eat driving down the street. Here in America, you know, we want instant gratification. Well, there's some things in life where instant gratification doesn't fit. And so the drug companies, knowing that, come along and say, well, look, now we've got an instant gratification here. Go out and enjoy yourself, indulge, and do whatever it is you want. And if you come up with some kind of a disease, you come to Marcus Welby, MD, at Mercy Medical Center, and we have a pill, we have a drug, and we'll just inject you, and you can go about your business. That's what people want to buy. Unfortunately, as you develop in this culture here of America, you find out, you know, by the time you get to be an old man, okay, that's great, but it doesn't work. That's just where reality is at. It's great, but it doesn't work. And they can give you this instant gratification for about 6 to 8 years, and then ultimately the final analysis comes down. You're going to die even with these miracle drugs. And they call them miracle drugs, miracle toxins. Now, the second International AIDS Conference was held in 1986. In Paris, scientists from a biotech company called Genentech announced that they have successfully tested a vaccine in the laboratory. The Genentech vaccine incorporates the GP120 protein on HIV's surface, the idea being that the GP120 would stimulate an immune response. The vaccine produced HIV antibodies in guinea pigs. Also at the conference, Dr. Jim Curran of the CDC predicts 300,000 cases of AIDS worldwide by 1991. Two comments. 1986, They're promising you a vaccine. This is 2006. Have you seen a vaccine yet, children? It'll be a cold day in hell when you see a vaccine for AIDS. AIDS is too profitable to cure. AIDS is profitable when you treat it. Selling these cocktails of drugs over here to keep you alive for 6 to 8 years, that's the way to make money. To keep you on the ragged edge, hoping against hope. Someday, modern science will come up with a vaccine, and it'll cure my AIDS. Okay. It could well be that they could develop a vaccine, but even if they could, they wouldn't. That's what happened with the March of Dimes. When they developed a vaccine for polio, it destroyed the March of Dimes and a multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry. And hey, listen, the pharmaceutical people haven't forgot that. Yes, it's good to search for, and it's good to be looking for a vaccine. But my God, don't ever develop one because it'll destroy your business. Further, in 1986, a new virus was discovered. It was a second type of HIV virus. It was discovered almost simultaneously by the laboratories of Dr. Max Essex at the Harvard School of Public Health and Dr. Luc Montagnier of the Pasteur Institute of Paris. Both find the virus, eventually named HIV-2, in West Africans, but the American and French groups came to different conclusions about the virus's danger. Essex thinks the virus is the missing link between chimp viruses and HIV, and that it is relatively harmless to humans, while Montagnier believes the new virus is highly lethal. It turns out that Essex's example likely had been contaminated in his lab, and Montagnier is credited with the discovery of HIV-2. He is, however, wrong about its lethality. HIV-2 appears to be both less virulent and less infectious than the HIV-1, which makes up the bulk of the world's infections. Now, the Surgeon General released a report in 1986. Surgeon General C. Everett Koop released a report urging parents and schools to have a frank and open conversation about AIDS with children and teenagers. Adolescents and pre-adolescents are those whose behavior we wish to especially influence because of their vulnerability when they're exploring their own sexuality, heterosexual and homosexual, and perhaps experimenting with drugs, he writes. Teenagers often consider themselves immortal, and these young people may be putting themselves at great risk. The report dispels myths that the virus could be spread by mosquitoes and recommends that the U.S. not pursue mandatory testing or quarantine. I want to underline the word quarantine here because in the Bible there's a quarantine law. And Cuba, the only country in the world that practices quarantine, has the lowest incidence of AIDS in the world, practicing that biblical principle of quarantine. And all the rest of the nations in the world that don't practice quarantine have a higher rate than Cuba, and some of them it's a pretty astronomical rate, like South Africa. We'll see a little later in the report here that the South Africans ignored it totally. Just went about their business, and now it's exploded down there in South Africa. 12% of the people are now HIV positive in that country of South Africa. Now, many are surprised that Koop, an evangelical Christian working for a conservative administration, would write and release such a candid report, and I must confess that we were worried about what that report would say and overwhelmingly pleased by the frankness. Conciseness and the clarity with which he spoke, recalls Dr. Jim Curran of the CDC. Koop actually drafted the report himself in his basement with the involvement of only a few close aides. If you'll remember, Koop was the famous Surgeon General that said, well, what you need to do is to pass out condoms in public school. Don't teach your children. Give them a condom. What that says, in effect, is that your children are going to go out and practice sex, whether you like it or not. Well, of course they are. I mean, we teach sex in the public school. We have sex education classes in which we teach our daughters that they should be warm, open, sexual objects for the boys in the school and so on, and it's going to help them later in marriage. Now, since we adopted this licentious approach to sex and sex education here in America, 25% of the teenagers in America, well, 25% of the young people between the ages of 12 and 25 have sexually transmitted diseases. Where did they learn that? Public school. Now, before we had sex education in public school, we had a semblance of ethics and morality, in which we taught our girls that they should be virgins, and to a lesser degree, our boys. Now, I don't quite understand the logic behind that. When I was a youngster, girls were supposed to be virgins, but boys were supposed to go out and have sexual experiences so that they would be experienced when they entered marriage, and the girls would have no experience at all. Now, I don't quite understand that, and the reason that I had a problem with it, even when I was a kid, was because if I'm going to have sexual experience, where am I going to get that experience? Well, my dad wanted to take me down to a whorehouse. I guess that was what the old-timers had in mind. See, the boys should be experienced. They should go into a whorehouse. Not exactly clear as to how that aids morality. But the girls, they shouldn't go to whorehouses. They shouldn't have sexual experiences. It was a crazy concept when I was a youngster growing up, and I guess that's why the doctors and medical people said, you know, these Christians, these religious people are nuts. Let's teach sex education in school in scientific terms. And that's what they've been doing. But the outcome of that now is from zero. I don't know of anybody that had a sexually transmitted disease when I was a kid going to school. Today, 25% of them have it. So, you know, you figure that one out. Now, in its morbidity and morality, or mortality rather, weekly report, the CDC analyzes reported AIDS cases and finds that the incidence rates for blacks and Hispanics is three times as high as that of whites. And among the cases diagnosed between June of 81 and August of 86, 25% are in blacks, who make up just 12% of the population. And 14% are in Hispanics, who make up 6% of the population. Among children, the disparity is even higher. 58% of cases are in blacks, and 22% are in Hispanics. Okay, so I guess the whites live a little cleaner lifestyle than the blacks and Hispanics. That's as of 1986. Then there's a needle exchange program started, angered by those who said drug addicts couldn't change their behavior, and despite state and city laws prohibiting the possession of needles without a prescription, John Parker, he was a former addict, starts the first needle exchange in the U.S. in New Haven, Connecticut, to combat the spread of HIV among injection drug users. Well, here again, you know, injection drug use is witchcraft, and these people practice witchcraft, and then they get a penalty called AIDS. And then some guy who is a former addict says, well, we drug addicts, you know, are susceptible to getting AIDS. We're susceptible to suffering the penalty that comes from our illegal behavior. So therefore, what we really are saying, we want to break the law, but we want to get away with it. We want to break the law and get away with it. And in our society, we go along with that. For instance, a guy goes out and he commits a heinous murder. I'm thinking of a little girl out in Santa Rosa, California. And she was kidnapped right out of her yard and raped and murdered by this guy. And they convicted him, caught him, convicted him. No doubt that he's the guy that did it. Okay, we know that. And I don't think the guy has been executed yet, but when the execution comes up, you can rest assured hundreds of people will be marching up and down outside the walls of San Quentin with placards pleading for sparing this guy's life, which God said that when he murders somebody, you kill him. And so here again, We want justice. We don't want people running around and raping little girls and murdering and killing them. But we don't want to do anything that would prevent it. We don't want to prevent it. And we want to spend $30,000 or $40,000 a year to lock this animal up for the rest of his life in prison. Which makes all the sense in the world if you're a prison guard, because after all, if you execute this guy, there's no employment. But if you lock him up in a cage, you know, you got to feed him and take care of him. So it's kind of like a zookeeper, you know. These prison guards are like zookeepers, and they lock these people up in cages, and then they feed them and take care of them, you know, for the rest of their life. And he makes employment, keeps the economy humming. WHO, the World Health Organization, they started an AIDS program in 1986. The World Health Organization Global Program on AIDS is started by Dr. Jonathan Mann, who had directed a CDC study of AIDS in Zaire. Mann grows the organization from nothing to a $100 million a year program with a staff of 250. He travels the world, meeting with world leaders and grassroots activists to sound the alarm and get government's attention, as well as to link AIDS with human rights. Now, throughout this series of programs, or this AIDS program by WGBH, they point out that if at any time they had put the resources and the money into the fight in any given country at any given time, they could have reversed it out. But they're always struggling to get more money. You ever notice that? Government puts out money, taxpayer money, to fight AIDS, but at very low levels over a long period of time, so as to prevent a solution to the problem, at least medically. Now, I pointed out to you that this really isn't a medical problem, it's a legal problem. But if you wanted to reduce it to a medical problem, yeah, you could probably eradicate AIDS. There are a couple of countries like Uganda, they point out here, where the AIDS epidemic has been brought under control. Cuba is another example. They brought it under control and they can manage it medically. And if that's what you want to do, it could be done. Now, if it can be done in Cuba and Uganda, why can't it be done in India? Why can't it be done in America? Why can't it be done? Well, because we don't want to change these people's behavior. That's number one. That's rule number one. And number two, it's a cash cow. We want to make a lot of money on research and on selling AIDS drugs. So we want to act like, we want to show the public that we're out here fighting AIDS. But we certainly don't want to win the war on AIDS. It's kind of like drugs, you know. We want to fight drugs, but we don't want to win the war on drugs. The solution to drugs is very simple. The solution to this illegal immigration is very simple. And I don't think anybody is in the dark about how to put an end to it. You just repress it. You just do what you need to do to stamp it out. But that isn't kind and gentle, and nobody wants to go out here killing people, you know. And I'll tell you this. If you went down to the Mexican border, and every time you saw a Mexican coming across the border, you shot and killed him and left his body for the buzzards to eat, how long do you think those Mexicans would keep coming? I'm just telling you that there's a solution to the problem. Now, nobody wants to do that. Well, okay. If you don't want to do that, well, then what do you want to do? You got 20 million people invading your country. Let's just put it out, put the shoe on the other foot. You've got a farm over here, and you know, let's say 30, 40 neighbors just come over and start building and taking over your farm. What are you going to do about it? Well, in the old days, they used to go out, they used to have these range wars, you know. People came out there and started setting up shop on somebody's ground. He went out and killed them. It's called self-defense. That's the way life is. Life is built up of self-defense. And if you don't do that at some point in time, you know, if you don't take some kind of action to solve the problem, then the problem continues to grow and exacerbates itself until there's an ultimate conclusion. Either you get with the program and solve the problem, or the problem solves itself, or it destroys you, one or the other. You know, one of the three. 1987, a paper suggested that HIV doesn't cause AIDS. Dr. Peter Duesberg, a respected biologist at the University of California in Berkeley, he published a paper in Perspectives in Cancer Research suggesting that HIV is not the cause of AIDS because a virus cannot cause a syndrome. And though his theories are not accepted by most in the scientific community, his work will attract the attention of South Africa's President Thabo Mbeki in the late 1990s. And that was kind of a pivotal move there. This theory that AIDS isn't a real problem, you know, just forget it. So it's part of the conspiracy theory. And this President Mbeki down there, he did absolutely nothing to prevent the spread of AIDS, and it just grew by leaps and bounds. It spread like wildfire through the little country of South Africa. And by the way, South Africa was not a third world backward country. It was a first world industrial power, and there was a health system in place and plenty of money. Now the blacks took over down there in South Africa, and they're turning it into a third world backward country. The whites are fleeing. And that's what happened in Rhodesia. The whites are out, and the blacks are in. They've got 1,000% a year inflation. You know, Rhodesia, they call it Zimbabwe today, used to be a food exporting nation. Now they're on the verge of starvation. They're importing food, and they haven't got any money to buy it. You know, there's a cause and effect relationship that goes on here. You take a look at the Iraq war over there. If you think about it pragmatically, you've got three groups of people over here that hate each other, and you had one guy, Saddam Hussein, could keep all three groups repressed and could keep peace and could keep order in the country. Now you took him out, and what have you got? Chaos. The Americans cannot maintain stability in Iraq the way Saddam Hussein could. So if you want stability in Iraq, you put Saddam Hussein back in power, and I'll bet you in 3 months you'll have total stability. Now, of course, nobody's going to do that, but you can see for yourself the cause and effect relationship. When he was in power and you didn't have an insurgency, everybody hated him. Well, I don't say everybody, but, you know, most of the people hated him. But he could keep order among these three groups of people. Now, we want to have democracy, so we went over there for regime change, threw him out, and we're over there giving these people democracy. And there isn't anybody that I've heard speak concerning Iraq that's happy with the American occupation of Iraq. I mean, this is, hell, even the Americans aren't happy and satisfied with the occupation of Iraq. Cause and effect, boys and girls, whether you like it or not, that's where reality is located. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week and has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to the website georgegordon.org or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, I'm talking about the age of AIDS. Up in 1987, the first vaccine trials occurred in that year. The first two AIDS vaccine clinical trials were approved. Both are recombinant approaches. The first, made by Microgenesis, is made using an insect protein. The second, by Bristol-Myers, is made using HIV's GP120 protein. delivered in a vaccina virus, the same virus used for the smallpox vaccine. Then Congress passed the Helms Amendment in 1987, angered by an explicit safe sex brochure developed by Gay Men's Health Crisis. Senator Jesse Helms, Republican of North Carolina, called for an amendment banning federal funds for any educational materials that promote or encourage homosexual sexual activities, and that policy is still in effect today. President Reagan delivered a speech about AIDS in 1987. He said in April, the president gives his first major speech on AIDS at the College of Physicians in Philadelphia, and he defended his administration's spending and endorsed education or educating students. Let's be honest with ourselves, he said. AIDS information cannot be what some call value neutral. After all, when it comes to preventing AIDS, don't medicine and morality teach the same lesson? I underlined that. Excuse me, boys and girls. He said, don't medicine and morality teach the same lessons? And I put it a resounding no. No. You see, medicine teaches that you can control this AIDS through drugs, and that you can cure it through vaccines, and that you can prevent it through the use of condoms. I don't know of morality that comes from any other source other than the Bible. Do you? Now, there are ethical principles that come out of the American Bar Association, and there are ethics and ethical principles that come out of the AMA. But morality, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill. Those are moral principles that come from our Creator. I don't know of any morality that comes out of Congress or legislatures. The medical approach to AIDS is the diametric opposite of the approach that God has towards AIDS. AIDS created by God for a mechanism to create a penalty for the moral violations of His law. You know, thou shalt not commit adultery. Adultery encompasses sodomy. The gays want to practice sodomy. The penalty for sodomy is death, and death by AIDS. No, I would disagree with that. I'm going to dissent. Medicine teaches that if you want to indulge in these immoral acts, go ahead. We can give you a heart replacement, heart transplant, liver transplant, and we can cure it. We'll give you an AIDS cocktail. My point is, they, in 30 years now, or 25 years, they haven't got a vaccine, and the drugs that they're offering you over here doesn't cure, it controls, and it only keeps you alive for 6 to 8 years. I don't call that a cure, and I don't call that a very intelligent plan. It is the plan that most people subscribe to. I got to tell you a little story here. We have a nice lady who lives across the road from us, my neighbor. And this lady developed cancer. Now, my wife developed cancer back in 1978. And my wife has been treating her cancer holistically with vitamins and minerals and Gerson and Ann Wigmore and so on for 30 years. She still has cancer. She'll probably die with cancer. We hope that she does not die from cancer. But we're not disappointed. It's a burden. You know, it would have been a lot better had she never developed cancer. I think that if you could avoid cancer, it would be a lot better for you. But, you know, once you develop cancer, it isn't a death sentence, and you can cure it. You can live with it. You can treat it. You can live for the rest of your life with it. Her mother had cancer, died at age 84. So it isn't something that's an automatic death sentence per se, but when you go to the medical doctors, it almost invariably is. And the neighbor lady across the street went to the doctors, and she's had chemotherapy, and she's been under treatment for a year, and they have a good insurance plan. Her husband works in a factory, and that factory has health insurance. And so the other day she had a relapse, and now they're going to take her over to St. Louis, and they're going to give her she's been under chemotherapy for a year, and now they're going to give her a bone marrow transplant. And no doubt they're going to spend $100,000 on this woman, and until her money runs out, or until the insurance company quits, or until she dies, now one of the three, and more than likely she's going to die. And it's kind of a tragedy, but, you know, she had a choice to make, and she made her choice. And her diet, you know, if I'd have gone to her 10, 15 years ago and said, now listen, Kathy, you need to stop eating pig and fat, and you need to stop eating refined foods, and you need to eat more green leafy vegetables and so on. I mean, I think she would have said to me, now listen, Gordon, nobody's going to tell me what to eat. I've heard that line before. Nobody's going to tell me what to eat. Well, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, children. I got a letter in here the other day. I got to share this with you. I think I will. I got a letter here from a lady, and well, I said I'd share it with you. I thought I had it right here. Anyway, this lady wrote a letter, and she said that her mother was dying. Yeah, here it is right here. In fact, I'll just answer this letter while we're on the subject matter over here. It says, my mother has been diagnosed with mesothelioma. Mesothelioma. I'm going to underline that. I haven't got a clue as to what that is. Not a clue. She's currently undergoing chemotherapy. Now, that tells me that she's got some form of cancer. And have been looking for some type of natural remedy for her. We need help. Time is running out for her and us. We have talked with holistic doctors in the area, and they're not up on this disease. Any help that you can give us will truly be appreciated. And we have followed natural healing remedies for years, and we're at a loss as for what to do. Thank you for your help, sincerely. And, yeah, I know what to do. I know exactly what to do. There was a king back in olden times, and he was on his deathbed. And he was a little concerned about dying. And people, when they're deathly sick, when they're about ready to die, they get real religious real fast. Real religious real fast, and they want a cure. Well, this king prayed to God, and he made a death sentence reprieve here. He wanted to live, and so God gave him an extra 15 years. And if you'll remember, I mentioned this earlier in the series that God said, I am your healer. Now, this lady has this disease because she broke some laws. She broke some laws. I don't know what laws she broke. I don't know if she's eating fat and blood and pig and jumping up and down and shaking bat's knuckles under the full moon or what, you know, but she did something. And now she's got this disease. I don't even know how old this lady is. It's her daughters that wrote this note to us. But she's undergoing chemotherapy. Now, let me tell you that I think that, from reading this one paragraph letter here, that it's not the lady herself. It's not the sick lady who wants to be healed. It's the daughters who want their mother healed. It isn't the mother who wants herself to be healed, because she's undergoing chemotherapy. Now, in the letter, they use the term, time's running out. We have talked with holistic doctors in the area, and they're not up on the disease. Can you help us? And she's looking for a natural remedy. Okay, well, here's the problem with chemotherapy. Chemotherapy works, no doubt about it. It's one of the 9 cures to cancer. Chemotherapy. It'll kill the tumor. But when you kill the cancer tumor with these potent drugs, your body has to dispose of this tissue. Let's say you've got a cancer the size of a golf ball in your body somewhere, and so you take this drug, and it kills that cancer tissue. Okay, how do we get the cancer tissue out of your body? Well, your body has to attack that dead cancer tissue, filter it through your lymph system, through your liver, and dispose of it through your kidneys and your bowel. And what invariably happens is the doctor is successful with the treatment. He killed the cancer, but the patient died because the patient was overloaded by the toxic waste from the cancer cells, and the patient dies. That's the problem with drug therapy. Now, your immune system attacks the cancer. You strengthen the immune system. And you do that by first taking away the poisons and toxins. I don't know what this lady eats. Does she eat Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage? Is her body plugged up with fat? Does she smoke? Is her body plugged up with nicotine? Her immune system is obviously impaired, or she wouldn't have this disease to start with, because her immune system would have already disposed of that disease long, long ago. You see, boys and girls, you're always exposed. You're walking down the street and you're breathing, and in comes this polio virus, AIDS virus, cancer virus, whatever comes in. And your immune system attacks it and destroys it. That's why you have to take immune suppressant drugs when you get a transplant. Because your immune system's working. It's going to destroy this foreign agent. Alright. This lady here has to make some major changes, and in a hurry. First thing you do is you start off by going to God in prayer, and you say, "Now look, I broke the law and I screwed up. And now I'm going to die. I'd like to live for 15 more years." You gave 15 years to that judge. You said you're the same yesterday, today, and forever. Now, do it for me. Now, what if this lady is already 70 years old? Well, in that case, if this lady is 70, she's already collected her 70, which is all the contract called for. Pretty hard to get another 15 years after you've already collected 70. Now, David was a man after God's own heart, died when he was 70. And, you know, it's pretty hard to beat that, you know. If God says, "I like this guy over here, he's a man after my own heart," and then he died at age 70 upon termination of the contract, pretty hard to go to God and say, "Well, give me 15 more years. Are you a man after God's own heart? Are you as good as David?" So, now, if you're under 70, then you're entitled to 70, and you're not about to collect it if you've got cancer and you're on your deathbed. And so you might come to God and you might say, "Now listen, I broke your laws. Have you thought about..." Let me flip over here, pull out my page here. You ever thought about what you do to God every time you practice Christmas? I mean, last Christmas, did you have a good time? Opening presents and, you know, just doing what comes natural at Christmas time. Well, that's a violation of Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 6. "And do you eat Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage and practice Easter, interracial marriage, unjust weights and balances? Do you have a checking account with credit cards? Unjust weights and balances?" Now, that's just five or six laws there. All right, now you're breaking these laws. And then you get cancer. And then you get real religious and you call upon God and you say, "God, I'm just real sick and I want you to heal me." Does that make any sense to you? Let's try it this way. You got a kid and you say to the kid, "Make your bed, take out the garbage, mow the grass." He gives you the finger, throws his clothes on the floor, throws a temper tantrum, and then storms out of the house. Comes back an hour later and says, "Oh, by the way, Mom, would you please give me $5 so that I can go down to the mall and play video games?" I don't know, kids. If I had a kid that behaved like that, I'd slap him up alongside the head and bring him back down to earth, as my old granddaddy used to say to me. "You know, son, it's about time you came back down to earth. You know, you're floating around out there in space somewhere. You're spaced out." Kids, you can't practice Christmas, Easter, sodomy, abortion, adultery, usury, vote. You know, is your mother a registered voter? Did you know that voting is an act of treason against God and violates the idolatry statute in Exodus 20, verse 3? I mean, think about it for a second. God gave you a system of law, and you say, no, I'm not going to practice that system of law. I'm going to practice the system of law of the United States or Germany or France or Lower Slovenia or whatever. I'm not going to practice this law. And then you want him to give you 15 more years? I mean, look, children, it's time to grow up and get real. Now, this king evidently said, I think I've broken the law, and I'm going to quit Christmas. I'm going to quit pork. I'm going to quit Easter. I'm going to quit this unjust weights and balances crap and witchcraft and sodomy, abortion, adultery, usury, and voting. And I'm going to practice your law. I'm going to practice the Passover and the days of unleavened bread and the Sabbath instead of Sunday. And I'm going to turn over a new leaf. Now, if your mother said, well, I'm going to turn over a new leaf, it might do her some good. But I don't think there's anything that you girls can do for your mother. But I don't want to be, people will say sometimes, they write me a letter and they'll say, you're not very sympathetic, you're hard and cruel, Children, don't you think it's about time that we faced reality? Death, is the wages of sin is death. I mean, you got that right from God himself. The penalty for the violation of these laws is death. Now, while we're breaking the law, we're having a good time. We know we're down on the beach and we're sifting sand through our toes and we're sipping a margarita and you're chasing the girls and you're just having a good time. Okay, but chasing the girls is idolatry. It's adultery. And sipping this margarita over here, in moderation, it's probably all right until you become an alcoholic. And then, all of a sudden you get cirrhosis of the liver like Mickey Mantle. Mickey Mantle, great guy. Drank a little, hit the sauce a little too heavy. Screwed up his liver. And then he goes to the doctors and he says, hey, give me a new liver. And so I think it was $500,000. And Mickey Mantle had the $500,000. So they gave him a new liver. Now, the guy whose liver Mickey Mantle received had to die. There's no such thing as two liver transplants, One guy gets the liver transplant and the other guy gets a gravestone. So Mickey Mantle lived another 6 months and then he died. Seems like to me that if you're going to die, might as well save the $500,000 and leave it for your widow and your children, don't you think? All right. Now, I'm going to die. I'm 67. Your mother's going to die, children. So let's face reality. Not going to die because I said so or because I'm uncaring or unthinking. I'm going to share this with all of our listeners out there so that they can learn a lesson. Before you break the law, why don't you think about the consequences that are likely to come from it? Now, you know that smoking causes cancer. Now, when you're lighting up the next cigarette and you take a big drag off of it, God, that just feels so good. I want you to think about how good is it going to feel when you've got lung cancer or when you're inhaling off of your cigarette through a tracheotomy, through a hole in your throat. So, I have empathy. But, boys and girls, people make their choices in life, sometimes out of ignorance, sometimes out of crass, callous indifference and disregard for the consequences that are likely to develop. And that's where AIDS is, kids. And AIDS, sometimes it's just ignorance. Sometimes it's forced upon people who are of and by themselves innocent. But, God told you what that innocent trip was all about in Exodus 20. He said plainly here, see if I can find it over. He says, I'm going to visit the iniquity of the children to the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. Where did he say that? It's over here in Exodus 20 somewhere. Here it is. It's in about verse 4. Exodus 20, verse 4. He says, you shall not make unto you any graven image or any likeness of anything that's in the heaven above or that's in the earth beneath or that's in the water under the earth. And you shall not bow down yourself to them nor serve them, because I am the Eternal your God. I'm a jealous God. And I visit the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. You know, the actions that you take today can affect your children and your children's children and your children's children's children to the third and fourth generation. I'm not really sure that a lot of people really give a rat's rectum one way or the other, but I think that it's something that you ought to be taking, that you should take into consideration. Now, this lady has already undergone chemotherapy. The chemotherapy destroys your immune system, and without your immune system, you can't survive, kids. So, if you get to the crossroads, and the crossroads are this, is this. It says, take this chemotherapy. Okay, they can keep you alive for another 18 months. But if you take the chemotherapy, then you're going to destroy your immune system, and then there's no hope. If the chemotherapy doesn't work, which it does work 37% of the time, but the other 63% of the time it doesn't work. So 63% of the time, chemotherapy is a death sentence. 37% of the time, it'll keep you alive for another 5 years. That's a choice that you've got to make. So my wife said no to the chemotherapy, and she went on the holistic program, and she's been here for 28 years, and we're satisfied with that program. So I'm not unthinking, and I'm not trying to be crass or uncaring. My dad died, and it took me 3 years to recover from it. When there's a death in your family, it'll take you about 2 or 3 years to recover from that death. I think that you girls want your mother to live, but does your mother want to live? Now that the chemotherapy is completed, or it's underway, if you were to stop the chemotherapy, then go to God in Exodus 15:26 and say, listen, I made a mistake over here, and I'm going to back off of this. And then go back to it. It might be that God would save her life. He's done it in the past. It's been done in the past. Not very often, but it has been done. And he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And upon true repentance, I'm sure that he would do that. But it's not anything that you girls are going to do. It's going to have to be your mother that does it. And if your mother doesn't want to do it, well, then she doesn't want to live very bad. And if that's the case, well, then there's nothing can be done for her. That's the bottom line. All right, a little sad story there, but something for all of us to learn from. So let's see if we can learn a lesson from it. Don't ask God to bail your chestnuts out of the fire, you know, when you're giving him the finger at the same time. We're just about out of time. I'll have to leave it right there. We'll pick this up again, talking about the AIDS story and the age of AIDS. Tomorrow night, same time, same station. If I can find my paper here, I'll give you a final reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. And until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.